Let's continue reading verses 36 through 55 of Genesis 31. In this last section of the chapter, we have Jacob defending his character before Laban, and then Jacob and Laban come to an agreement to stay away from one another. Genesis 31, beginning at verse 36. Then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock. And you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." And Laban answered and said to Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this flock is my flock. All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Then Jacob said to his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. Laban called it Jigar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. And Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me this day." Therefore its name was called Galeed. Also Mizpah, because he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we were absent one from another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me." Then Laban said to Jacob, "Here is this heap, and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap and this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father, judge between us." And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. Once again, let's consider some background notes. When you read the commentaries on the life of Jacob, you get mixed reviews. Most commentators see Jacob as deceitful and crafty and cunning and totally selfish. Yes, say these commentators, Jacob did want the blessing of God and the spiritual side of the birthright, but it was only for selfish reasons. On the other hand, some commentators see Jacob in a good light. He was a man of God, and he only made a few mistakes, and those mistakes were because of the people who surrounded him. My own view of Jacob is somewhere in the middle. There's no doubt that Jacob was selfish and deceitful and had a long way to go and many lessons to learn in the school of God. But at the same time, Jacob did have a genuine desire for the things of God, and he did learn the lessons that God taught him. Furthermore, during his 20 years with Laban, we don't read of Jacob complaining, and he was fair, and he was a hard worker. He was not a freeloader. So what Jacob says to Laban in these verses is the truth. Laban cannot refute his just claims. Jacob had been a good shepherd. He had been a good worker. He had gone the extra mile. Jacob served faithfully for 14 years for his wives and then 6 years for his flocks and herds. During all that time, he didn't take any of Laban's animals for food, and any losses from Laban's flocks, he paid for out of his own flocks. And he didn't complain when Laban reduced his wages 10 times. So Jacob relates this to Laban, and when it's obvious that Laban did not have a leg to stand on, Laban wisely decided to make an agreement with Jacob. Jacob set up a stone as a pillar, which was typical of making a covenant in that day. Also, they had the typical covenant meal, normal in that day when making a covenant. Now, this agreement has been wrongly called the Mizpah benediction, verse 49. May the Lord watch between you and me when we were absent one from another. I'm sure you've seen this so-called blessing on greeting cards, thank you notes, charm bracelets, plaques for the wall, and other items. True? But in context, this is really not a blessing at all. It's more of a malediction or denunciation, even could be considered a curse, not a benediction. Laban is telling Jacob that he doesn't trust him and that he'd better not mistreat his daughters and he'd better not cross the boundary marker that's being set up. And may the Lord judge between us, particularly you, Jacob, while we're absent one from the other. So you see, it's not really a blessing or benediction in context. After Jacob made a sacrifice and they had a meal together, Laban said goodbye and left early the next morning to go back to Haran. Laban had come in like a lion, but he goes out like a lamb. Now, just let me make one more comment before we go to our doctrinal points. It's in reference to verse 53. In verse 53, Laban swore by the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father. This is where Laban disappears from Scripture, but you can see that Laban is typical of many people today. They invoke the name of God, but they believe in a lot of other gods as well. A lot more we could say there, but let's move now to our doctrinal points for this section. Doctrinal point number one. The life of Jacob is a microcosm of the history of Israel. The life of Jacob is a microcosm of the history of Israel. In the next chapter, Jacob's name is changed to Israel. In many ways, the history of Jacob's life reflects the history of the nation Israel. As Jacob was forced to leave home and go to a foreign land, so the nation of Israel was dispersed, scattered amongst the nations. As God's covenant and promise to Jacob at Bethel in no way was changed or terminated, so God's covenant with the Jewish people is still valid today. As God prospered Jacob while he was in a foreign land in spite of opposition and unfair treatment, so the Jewish people have prospered while being dispersed among the nations in spite of opposition and unfair treatment. As God brought Jacob back to his homeland, so God will bring the Jewish people back to their land, and that's going on today as we speak. As God protected Jacob from Laban the Syrian, so God is protecting Israel from the Syrians today. The life of Jacob is a microcosm of the history of Israel. Now consider a few more possible aspects to this microcosm. The fact that when Jacob first returns, there is a measure of unbelief, as we'll see in chapter 33, may be reflected in the fact that Israel is returning at present in unbelief. The fact that Jacob's sons wrongly treated some of the people of the land, as we'll see in chapter 34, may be reflected in the fact that the nation of Israel has not always been fair in the way they have treated the inhabitants of the land. And the fact that Jacob was not appreciated by his surrounding neighbors, but was protected by God, may be reflected in the present state of affairs concerning the nation Israel. Now, those last few thoughts, I didn't read in any book, so think it through. I don't want to be dogmatic on it. But the good news is that there will be a spiritual revival in the nation of Israel in the future. The scriptures predict that not only will the Jewish people return physically to their land, but there will be a spiritual revival as well. Read Romans chapter 11 in this connection. I believe this spiritual revival of the nation is seen in the spiritual revival in Jacob's life that comes in chapter 35. In Genesis chapter 35, Jacob finally goes back to Bethel, where God appeared to him. The life of Jacob is a microcosm of the history of Israel. Doctrinal point number two. The life of Jacob is a microcosm of the Christian life. The life of Jacob is a microcosm of the Christian life. Now, I'm sure you've heard the following expressions. There's a little bit of Jacob in every one of us, or we're all a little bit like Jacob. Well, the fact of the matter is, we're all a lot like Jacob. And I'm speaking to Christians here this morning. Like Jacob, we have a desire for spiritual things, and I trust like Jacob, we can give a good account of ourselves, as Jacob does here in these verses before us. But like Jacob, we have a lot of rough edges that the Lord needs to work on in our lives. Like Jacob, we make mistakes that the Lord must correct. Like Jacob, we are selfish and proud so much of the time. Like Jacob, we must go to the school of God and take a number of courses, sometimes the same course twice or more. Like Jacob, we don't always pass these courses with flying colors. But like Jacob, who came to graduation when he was old, see Hebrews 11:21, so in our lives, God continues to work with us and in us, as we read in Philippians 1:6. Philippians 1:6, he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. The life of Jacob is a microcosm of the Christian life. Now, one practical application from this section. Let's learn to respond without reacting to false accusations. Let's learn to respond without reacting to false accusations. What do we do when we're falsely accused? We tend to react. In fact, we tend to overreact. There's a natural tendency to retaliate and try to take revenge. We know that this is wrong because Romans 12:19 says, never take your own revenge. Well, what should we do when we're falsely accused? Just sit there, do nothing? We should respond without reacting. That's what Jacob does here. When Laban falsely accused Jacob, Jacob did not retaliate or take revenge. But he did not just let it pass. He responded with the facts in a concise and firm way. That's what Nehemiah did when he was falsely accused. In Nehemiah chapter 6, the enemy accused Nehemiah of wanting to be a king over all the people. Nehemiah flatly denied the charge, and he continued to build a wall. He didn't waste a lot of time trying to defend himself or take revenge, but he did respond. When the Lord Jesus was falsely accused of casting out demons by the power of Satan, what did he do? He responded by stating the truth, that these were lies, but he didn't react by retaliating or taking revenge. Let's learn to respond without reacting to false accusations. You know, just this past week, one of my students, who's not doing very well academically, sent me a note in which she accused me of being unfair in the way I give tests. Now, my natural tendency would be to react and even flunk this student for daring to question my ways of testing. But I'm going to try to not react, but I am going to respond with a note to this student and tell her exactly why I test the way I do and that it's worked for over 20 years, but I'm always open to change if she can show me a better way. Do you follow this practical application? Let's learn to respond without reacting to false accusations.